so we're going to change gears again from a missions land to mineralization land. Although as associate editor with SSSAJ, I do solicit a lot of nitrous oxide papers for review. So if I've bugged you about that this year, I apologize. So we're going to talk about a study that we've been doing in Kimberly, Idaho for the last 4 years in cooperation, intensive cooperation with the USDA Ag Research Service there. And in fact, the study that I'll be talking about today actually is on ARS land. Okay, so as someone who does a lot of extension work, I like to give a little bit of a background to get you into what our situation is and why we're doing what we're doing. So in southern Idaho, we have a lot of dairies. 474,000 was the standing herd count in 2015. Not for all of Idaho, but just in six counties in south central Idaho, also called the Magic Valley region of Idaho. And that's new. That's within the last 30 years. Before that, it was primarily potato, sugar beet, small grains production, a little bit of corn, a little bit of alfalfa. So we've had a huge change in how things are managed agriculturally in the Magic Valley region. And so with that comes a lot of questions, sometimes concern about what that means and what that's doing to the Magic Valley region. So in recent years, what that has looked like is been more related to nitrates. When I first got to start this position with Idaho in 2007, everybody was talking about phosphorus. However, once EPA developed a report about the Yakima Valley nitrate issues in the drinking water and was linking that to dairies, suddenly they started looking at the neighboring states pretty quickly. And Idaho was one of the first ones they started looking at after they were putting that report together, saying, okay, do you guys have nitrate issues? They're having them. Washington, you have a lot of cows. And so that's when a debate, I think, is an understatement, but a debate on how the dairy industry was contributing to these nitrates. And the groundwater was starting. And you're getting different responses from people. Marv Patton, who is with the Idaho State Department of Agriculture, was saying manure is not an issue when it comes to nitrates. So people are getting this message, and then they're getting other messages saying from freelance writers saying that Idaho is a sewer system because of the dairy manure applications. And so the people are getting all kinds of different information, and we didn't have the science to say that no or yes, you are getting a lot of nitrogen, especially from those organic nitrogen compounds in that manure, which is the part that we don't know as much about. In fact, we don't account for it. We look at pre-plant soil test nitrate and ammonium, but we just assume that the mineralization of the nitrogen coming from manure and the soil and everything else is the same, and we haven't developed a way to account for that nitrogen. And we know that on some fields we're getting 100, 200, 300, even 400 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare in some seasons released from those organic nitrogen compounds that aren't being accounted for. So what we did is we created an 8-year study to evaluate these fields that were receiving repeated dairy manure applications. And we have a lot of different objectives that we're looking at in the study, agronomic and environmental, but for this talk today, I'm going to focus on how nitrogen mineralizes in these systems, because this is probably the most difficult part to study, and yet is probably of the greatest interest, especially to our environmental folks in the dairy industry. They're really hanging on what we're finding here, which can be intense sometimes. So the design of the study is a simple randomized complete block design, not very fancy, and just 4 replications. And this is a field study, so we have 12-meter by 18-meter plots. We made them larger because in addition to nitrogen mineralization, we're looking at a lot of other components as well. So we have to make a lot of space in those plots to do a lot of digging and sampling and such. And the crop rotation is one that is commonly done in southern Idaho, barley, sugar beet, wheat, potato. And so we just finished our potato this season, and so we'll go back into barley, sugar beet, wheat, potato in that field. It has a sister field next to it where we're also doing a similar layout, but that's another discussion. And so this is what this looks like, and I like to show this graph to the a lot of our stakeholders because people don't realize when we start saying 50 tons, 100 tons, 10 tons of manure, you know, whenever you start saying tons, they just imagine it's this much, no matter what numbers are before it. So I like to kind of give this to show people what that is. So this is no manure applied. This is a chalky, calcareous, portinus silt loam, very typical to the southern Idaho region and what most, a lot of growers work with. That's 17 tons of the hectare. Again, when I first got there, I thought that that was like several inches thick, but it's very, very thin dusting that you can barely see. 34 ton and 52 ton. And the reason why we pick these rates is because the 17 ton rate tends to be what people are going to do if they want to just build up their organic matter or their nutrients or save on fertilizers. 52 ton and higher is what you start to see next to the dairy. And so we wanted to get these different scenarios. So we have six manure treatments. So we have those three rates multiplied by two application frequencies. And so that's either annual application of that manure or applying every other year. And we went with it every other year because that's what a lot of the growers wanted to do, especially the ones working with potatoes and sugar beets, did not want to put manure right before those crops due to quality issues and yield loss issues. So we tried both of those. We also have a fertilizer-only treatment and control that has received no fertilizer or no nutrient at all since we've started this study. This is what the nutrient content of those different dairy manures looks like. And so every year we apply another dairy manure source. And I just wanted to show this really quickly to give you an idea of what kind of material this is. And so you'll see that the mean carbon-nitrogen ratio is about 15. This is typical for ruminant animals. And it also means that you have a lot of larger chained nitrogen compounds, a lot of lignin, a lot of cellulosic compounds, which means very slow release. Sometimes you're lucky to get 10% plant available nitrogen the first year, maybe 8% the second year, maybe 5% the third year, maybe 4% the fourth year. It's the gift that keeps on giving, which makes it really tricky to evaluate when it comes to nitrogen mineralization. You don't get to do one study, all your nitrogen releases. Instead, it releases slowly over time. So that's why I wanted to take a different approach. And instead of looking at the manure itself and its mineralization potential, I want to look at the soil that had been receiving these manure applications and evaluate it for its mineralization potential. So that's what we did. And what I really wanted to look at is, while we're studying the nitrogen mineralization of this material, wanted to compare those findings to pre-plant soil tests that are typical and standard to southern Idaho. Yes, there's a lot of other interesting tests being looked at right now, but I thought if we have a test that's already, that the growers are already using that works, why not go with that? So that's what we did. So every spring, from 2013 to now, we collect pre-plant soils from every plot. So we're not mixing manure and soil together. We're actually taking the soil that we've already treated with years and years of manure applications. We composite 10 samples per plot at two depths, and this is what typical to what growers in Idaho do. We do 0 to 12 inch and 12 to 24, as opposed to more shallower depths in other regions. Then we also analyze these soils for standard agronomic soil tests, which I'll get into, and aerobically incubated these at 22 degrees Celsius for 100 days at field moisture. So we've done this four times. We've done four of these aerobic incubations. We do them every year. And we went with 100 days just because the manure is a more complex material. We want to make sure it had enough time to break down. So that's my post at Morgonco. He's sitting here today. Thanks for being here, Morgonco. He's got a poster, so go see him. So this is all this looks like. We're collecting 10 soil samples per plot, sieve it through a two millimeter sieve, put them in plastic bags A good friend of mine uses the straw method. I don't know if it really helps get some air to the microbes or not. Andy, do you recognize this? But it's almost like a tradition now. So we throw those in there, and then we incubate them for that 100-day period. And they are monitored weekly for moisture content to make sure they're not drying out in there. Okay, so here comes the fun stuff. So this is a correlation analysis that I did comparing these pre-plant soil tests to net nitrogen mineralization coming out of these studies, these incubations. And so in the first column are the different soil tests that I included for this presentation, but we looked at a lot of other things too. But these seem to be the ones that were kind of coming up as higher, more highly correlated. Nitrate and ammonium pre-plant, not much relationship, not a big surprise there. Nitrogenization is driven by a substrate, by organic nitrogen compounds. So when we compared it to total nitrogen, we actually got a pretty good correlation. Also to other things as well, organic matter, Olsen phosphorus, and Olsen potassium. These are all coming from that manure, so they're all building up as we're adding more and more manure. These are, especially the Olsen phosphorus, is a really beautiful correlation. However, it's not one I'm exploring as much at the moment because this is very specific to a field receiving manure, dairy manure application. So would this translate to a field that received poultry litter that's never received manure, dairy manure? Probably not. So what I'm going to focus on for this talk today is total nitrogen, which I know is predominantly organic nitrogen in this soil, and that is the substrate for what drives nitrogen mineralization. So I did a multiple regression, and so this is, I'm going to take this piece by piece going back through the years. So on the x-axis is pre-plant total soil nitrogen via the combustion method. On the y-axis is net mineralized nitrogen. Again, that's not gross, that's net. And so in the first year, we're not seeing a great R-square comparing those, and I think that's where a lot of people studying these two components stop. So we went on the second year, we've applied a little bit more manure. R squared is only 0.3 for that year. However, as we keep going on to the study, adding more and more manure, accumulating that total soil nitrogen, we're getting better, a better spread of total soil in the soil and starting to get better R squared until we got to 2016 and we've got our best R squared yet. And because we've developed a system now that has very strong variations in how much nitrogen, organic matter, and other things going on. So I brazenly fit one line to all those points. I don't know if my statistician is going to approve that or not, but for the talk today, I did that. And it's not too bad. We went down to the second foot, and I thought this was really interesting because if this is true, it shows that not much happened under 0.07, 0.06% total soil in, and it flattens out. But once you get over that, that's when we started seeing things happening. Now, this is a pretty powerful graph, and with great power comes great responsibility. And so what makes me nervous about this is we've got EPA on our heels wanting to take this graph, this number, and call it, you know, the universal number for predicting nitrogen from these soils. And that makes me very uneasy. One of the things that makes me uneasy about it is it doesn't account for temperature. And so it assumes that all this nitrogen is going to release perfectly. And that's not something we saw. Am I running short on time?
Oh, you're good.
Okay. Okay. So before I get into that, I do want to show that we are seeing that that total nitrogen move down to the second foot and even the third foot. This data was collected by Dr. April Latham and her crew, and this was taken in 2015 after we've been doing this study for several years. And this first graph is annual manure applications, and she's starting to see that total soil nitrogen increase at the second foot and the third foot. What that means for us is that we are having a little bit of organic matter moving down in those lower depths, which means we're probably getting some nitrogen mineralization in those lower depths that we really haven't been thinking about before. So that's one of the components that we need to make sure that we're thinking about. The temperature factor is pretty important. When I got to Idaho, people told me that nitrogen didn't release until July or August. And I was like, that's crazy, because I did my education in North Carolina where we put down hog manure and things released within the first few weeks, first month at the latest. And so this was really surprising for me. And so what we wanted to do is to not just do these nice little incubator studies, but to take this further to the field and find out what was going. And so we did a buried bag method, which is something that's been done by Dale Westerman, by Rick Lentz, Gary Lersch, and other people at ARS have had success with this. And so we used their exact same bags, and we conducted the study. So similar to the other study, we collect 15 soil samples per plot, and we composite them, and that's actually really key, that we mix them all together. And then they are sieved, and then those samples are put into 12 or 15, now we're doing 15 of these plastic bag tubes that don't allow for water loss, but they do allow for exchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide to those bugs, so we don't kill those bugs. We put them in these tubes, we insert them back into the soil cores that we left behind, just like that. We tuck that little top bit under so we don't get water in those bags. And then throughout the season, one of those 15 bags is removed and destructively sampled and analyzed for ammonium and nitrate. And a lot of people think this is a crazy way to look at mineralization, but we've been pretty happy with it. This is a comparison between what we see mineralized nitrogen from that berry bag study over the whole season compared to sugar beet nitrogen uptake. I picked sugar beets because it's a known luxury consumer of nitrogen. Anyway, we get a really nice relationship between how much nitrogen comes in that we test in those berry bags and how much is taken up by that plant, which gives us a good idea that we're not too far off in using this this method. So the growing degree day part is part of the study. We're looking at all this data. We're starting to evaluate it. So I'll give you sort of a teaser as to what we're seeing now. I'm really interested in thoughts and ideas on how to go forward on this topic. And so this is what we collected from the first 3 years. We're still collecting the end of the first of 2015, and the 2016 data is currently being processed. Those darker data points are our heaviest annual manure treatment, and then the pale triangles are the control soil. We have data for all the soils and all the treatments, but this is all I'm showing for today. And then the pink line is the soil temperature that we see going from day zero is early May all the way to October, day 150. So what are we seeing here? So you'll see in that first, let's see, I can do this. Okay, so the control soil releases a little bit of nitrogen every year, but not a whole lot. Again, this is what we're telling people how much nitrogen they're gonna get out of their soil for mineralization, no matter what the history is, just because we haven't had a good tool to tell people what they're getting. However, after 3 years of this application, temperatures are cooler here in May, June, not seeing any nitrogen release. And as soon as it started to warm up into July, then we're seeing this huge release of nitrogen that, again, our growers would not normally be accounting for after 3 years of these applications. This is a big deal. This is a lot of nitrogen that's being released. Not only is it nitrate leaching issues that could be caused, but also quality issues. We have a lot of crops that respond poorly to these late season releases of nitrogen. So this is showing that we are getting accumulations from all these different manures. Applications from 1, 2, and 3 years ago, and it's making these systems vulnerable to spikes of nitrogen mineralization that occur during these hotter temperature periods in July and August. We are wanting to take this further and do some growing degree day modeling, and so taking this information and giving the growers something that they can use. So the hope is that eventually we can get to a point where we can say, you know, what is, where's your location? So we can figure out what the growing degree days are historically and what they're going to be that season. And then keep exploring our pre-plant soil numbers, the total nitrogen, and maybe look at other things too as we continue to explore and see if we can do some prediction. This was put together by my previous postdoc, Kate Cassidy Duffy, who loved to model nitrogen mineralization. She's one of Cabrera's former students. And so she actually divided net nitrogen mineralization by the pre-plant total soil N. So essentially, this is your mineralizable soil total N. Kind of a different way to look at it. And she was having some success by taking all 3 years of data and being able to develop some regressions based on this information. Again, the problem here is that we had to do different regressions for manure plots versus control plots. What we want is a regression that works for all soil types. And so that is where we are now, and that's what we're working on in future years, is to figure out how to model this better. And I'm confident that we will figure it out and be able to give something to our growers to use. So bottom line, in this study, we saw that pre-plant soil organic matter, total nitrogen, Olsen phosphorus, and Olsen potassium was highly correlated to potentially net mineralizable nitrogen. So the next step, have humility. We need soils from other regions with contrasting histories. We need to realize that this graph works great for this soil and be very careful about how this gets used and translated and applied to other regions. The other point I want to make is it's become clear that the incorporation of time and temperature are critical for nitrogen mineralization prediction for this cool and arid our climate, and also for this nitrogen source specifically. So our next step is to incorporate this data that we've been collecting over the last few years, the pre-plant soil tests, the nitrogen mineralization numbers from the berry bag study, and temperature data to see if we can evaluate and eventually develop a multiple regression prediction model that somebody can use to help figure out how much nitrogen mineralization they'll get based on where their soil's at. And these are some starting points for us. I'd like to acknowledge all the wonderful people who've helped support and lift this project up. And I'd like to acknowledge David Graybill, my graduate student, who was there at the beginning of the study and helped us develop it. And he'll be defending his thesis soon and looking for a job, so please talk to him. I'd like to also acknowledge all of our wonderful funding sources who've believed in us from the get-go and continue to believe in us and that we're doing something that makes sense. So a lot of appreciation there. So thank you. That's a bird's eye view of our two studies, the sister study next to it. And you can tell where the control plots are that don't get any nitrogen. So anyway, thanks for your time. Thank you.